This is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Many, many families are struggling with the same question today, and that is how in the world to talk to children about the headlines that came over the last 24 hours with the news about South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford and his admission of infidelity. We're not talking about a simple and uncomplex admission. We're talking about a tortuously tawdry kind of descent into personal immorality that has just come to the nation's headlines. And I have had several emails and communications from parents saying, okay, what do I do with this? What in the world do you do with this? You got children at all these different levels. This is almost like we're being put right back into the Bill Clinton years when the same questions were being asked during the sexual issues related to former President Bill Clinton when he was in the White House. Now, all of a sudden, you have a Republican governor in a deep South state in South Carolina, and there the people of South Carolina are just reeling from this, trying to figure out. First, they had the governor missing for 4 days, and, well, that's been clarified when a reporter met him after a tip as he was coming off of a plane in Atlanta that had departed Argentina. So we're going to be talking today about how to talk to children about this kind of headline news dealing with personal immorality. And how much to say, and we're going to be talking about different ages of children, different ranges of these ages, because talking to a 10-year-old about this is going to be different than talking to a 16-year-old who comes in and says, Mom, Dad, how do you explain this? What does this mean? I want to invite you to join the conversation. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to come back to talk about how to talk to children about all of this. And it's one of those unavoidable issues. And that was one of the legacies of the Clinton years. For the first time, you had children, many times as young as 6, 7, or 8, asking questions about what they were hearing in the headlines. You could not have the television news on without everyone in the room being introduced to certain sexual acts and a certain sexual vocabulary that children that age had generally been shielded from in times past. But that was gone then. And one of the legacies of that is that it was more or less perpetually gone. Because what happened then entered into the laugh lines of the culture. It entered into the entertainment stream. And before you know it, popular culture had just kind of renormed itself with that as the expectation. Well, now we're looking at something very similar. Change the party, change the particulars, an equal disaster now coming before the American people in the headlines. It's not the President of the United States, so it's not likely that these headlines will last as long. But when it comes to what was actually going on here, it's obviously a big issue to discuss. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We're not talking about the governor's political future. That is doubtful in the extreme. We're not talking about the sexual morality or immorality of something as blatantly immoral as adultery, although there are angles of that that might be good for us to discuss. We're really taking the specific question of how to talk to children and teenagers about this when they ask the questions based upon the headlines, Mom, Dad, what do these things mean? It is our responsibility as parents to give an answer. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're also glad to hear from you by email. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com. You can follow on Twitter. Just sign up to follow Albert Mohler or Mohler Radio. And, of course, we also have Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. We'll get to that issue in just a moment. First, to review some other issues in the news. It looks like almost all of the federal abstinence-based sex education programs are going to expire next week. And that's a big story. It is one that is largely under the radar of the national media right now with other things. I think a lot of American parents, and beyond that, just many American citizens, would be very interested to know that something like the Title 20 Adolescent Family Life Program, or AFL, which went away in 1994, is similar now in parallel, going to be knocking out Title 5, also known as the Community-Based Abstinence Education Program that was created by Congress in the year 2000. So the Clinton administration got rid of the Title 20 Adolescent Family Life Programs in the year 1995, and now we're coming all the way down to 2009, where in a new administration, the lack of support for abstinence-based sex education programs will mean the end of CBAE, that's Community-Based Abstinence Education Programs, and they are set to expire next month. As a matter of fact, it looks like it may be as soon as next week. You're talking here about a major sea change in the way sex education be taught in schools. You have basically two extremes here, folks. If you think of a continuum, in terms of what goes on in the public schools, you have, on the more conservative side, abstinence-based sex education programs. Now, by definition, these are programs that are to encourage teenagers not to have sex before marriage. That's what abstinence means in this context. Now, on the other extreme, you have what is known as comprehensive sex education, or CSE. Now, how comprehensive is comprehensive sex education? It's not only about the birds and the bees and the parts and what they do and how babies are made. It's about how to have sex. It literally involves matters of sexual technique, such things as using real demonstrations of contraception and devices. Some of this stuff is hard to talk about on the radio, quite frankly, and that ought to give you an indication of just how far out those things are on that end of the spectrum. Well, the new administration has shifted the center of gravity far from the abstinence-based sex education programs, and as President Obama was running for office as a candidate, he opposed those programs. Now his administration is, I think the way the administration would put it would be, allowing them to expire, which means killing them by not reauthorizing and refunding them, and then it goes to the other extreme. Now, when I say it goes to the other extreme, that doesn't mean that absolute comprehensive sex education program is coming to every single school district in America. To speak carefully, what this means is that the abstinence-based programs are not going to be funded. So this creates a new normal. So that spectrum that had been far larger is now going to be much smaller, and it's all on the wrong end of the spectrum. So parents, when your children go back to the public schools in the fall, they may be going back to a very different picture when it comes to sex education programs. Looking at the headlines today, it's interesting to see that in the aftermath of the meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention here in Louisville over the last 2 days, one of the big issues of national concern is a resolution that was adopted that addresses the denomination's celebration of pride in the fact that America elected its first African-American president in President Barack Obama. At the same time, the denomination expressed what it called strong disagreement with many of the president's policies. Now, I would suggest to you that this is almost exactly what the Southern Baptist Convention should have done. I actually voted for this resolution. I think it was a very fine resolution because I think it expresses the two things that we really want to say here. Number one, we are proud that America elected its first African-American president. That says good things about this country. It's a very powerful, symbolic act, and it's about time. But when it comes to the individual who was elected here, as much as we want to take pride in his election due to the fact that he is the first African-American president of the United States, at the same time, we have to indicate very clear and profound disagreements with his policies. Now, in all matters related to politics, sometimes it requires a rather deft definition. We support this, we do not support that. We can go with you this far, we cannot go farther. We will be with you on this issue, but not on that issue. Just recently, the President of the United States held an important forum on fatherhood. And from what I can tell, it was a very healthy thing. And the President of the United States brought together many different social service organizations, including Christian organizations, and held a forum on fatherhood in which he spoke profoundly to his own boyhood with the absence of a father. That's a profound statement coming from a President of the United States. He spoke about the need for fathering, he spoke about the responsibilities of fatherhood, and he said he was going to marshal his administration in order to address the issue of fatherlessness and poor fathering and the lack of respect for fatherhood. Well, count me in on that one. And insofar as this president is on the right side of issues, we are duty-bound to say that he is and to support him and to wish him well in those policies. If this president puts his energies behind strengthening fatherhood and recognizing and respecting the role of fathers, then you bet I'm going to be with him on that one. But when it comes to repealing the Defense of Marriage Act, I'm on the other side of the fence. When it comes to issues related to embryonic stem cells and what I see as his continual erosion of a pro-life position in the law, his advocacy, at least as a candidate for the Freedom of Choice Act, I am diametrically on the other side. But I think one of the big issues for believing Christians who have strong convictions on these issues is the balance where we know that we really do need to take genuine joy in the fact that America has its first African-American president. We also need to register genuine concern and sometimes profound moral outrage at decisions that any incumbent in office would make, including this president, Barack Obama. You know, for Christians, there's another level to this altogether. That's where the secular issue would end. But from a Christian perspective, there's another level of responsibility because we are told, we're commanded to pray for those in authority over us. So our first concern about Barack Obama as President of the United States is whether or not we are fulfilling our responsibility to pray for him. Back when he was inaugurated, I wrote and published a prayer for President Barack Obama. It models what I think we should be praying and how I believe we should be praying about this president. And we'll put a link up to that prayer just to encourage you if you're trying to frame your thoughts about how to pray for President Barack Obama. We'll be back to talk about how to explain to children and teenagers what's going on in the headlines, the scandal related to South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford. A lot to talk about there. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The scenario is this. Tonight at the dinner table, perhaps in the car, coming back from the park, wherever you are, when you're with your kids, whether they be younger children or teenagers, if the radio's on or the television's on, if they've been looking at the news, then the headlines concerning South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford are likely to be front and center in their attention. And if they are paying attention, you're going to hear interesting questions such as, what is that? Mom, Dad, what's going on there? Here you have South Carolina's Republican governor, who has just admitted in a press conference yesterday that he has been having an affair with a woman in Argentina for the last year. Now, that's complicated enough, but let me tell you, the scenario here just gets uglier, because you're talking about a man who was just gone. He disappeared for 4 days over the Father's Day weekend. And things really looked really weird when his office and governor's staff could not explain where he was, when the security detail that is supposed to take care of South Carolina's governor said that he had slipped through them, and when his own wife, here was the scary part, said she did not know where he was. And now we know a whole lot more. We know that she found out 2 weeks ago that he was having an affair with a woman in Argentina. According to some of these press reports, he began an email correspondence with this woman some years ago, but over the course of the last 12 to 15 months has been having an affair with her, and he went over the Father's Day weekend to Argentina, where some reports say the relationship ended and he spent days crying down there in the South American country before coming back and meeting a reporter from The Sun, the Columbia, South Carolina newspaper, when he walked off of the plane from Buenos Aires there in Atlanta. Well, as things tend to go, very quickly he found himself in front of an entire forest of microphones in a press conference where once again we saw a major figure. It was New York Governor Eliot Spitzer just months ago, and now it's South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford. But even as the headlines were about the New York governor, a Democrat, Eliot Spitzer, months ago, you'll remember that had to do with a prostitute and with all the rest. They're in the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C. Parents had to do some explaining there, too. But this is South Carolina. It's a Republican governor. And it's a picture that gets really, really messy. Here you have a married governor that has four sons. The youngest, according to the news media, is 10. And now you have this open admission. And what was really interesting about the governor's press conference, if you watched it or if you've read a transcript of it, here is the weirdness of it. He doesn't answer a lot of the questions. Are you going to resign as governor of South Carolina? He didn't answer that. Do you want the relationship to be over with the woman in Argentina? He did not answer that. Is the relationship actually over? No clear answer. Many of the news reports looking back at that press conference say that he rambled. I would say it's really more than just rambling. He was just all over the place. USA Today says that Governor Mark Sanford's announcement that he had an affair may have sounded more like a confessional than a news conference. Talking about the religious language that was used, it was just a very, very mixed bag. How do you talk about this with your children? Perhaps some of you have already faced this challenge. After all, we're well into the news cycle now. There are some of you who, during the course of the day, may have been driving around, shopping, you know, taking the kids to the pool. You may have been doing anything at a Little League game, and the next thing you know, you're talking about the South Carolina governor and a great moral tragedy. One of the issues that recurs for parents in this age is how to speak to children and teenagers about this. And Christian parents have a particular responsibility. And we're the ones who are responsible to be able to give an answer to our children that reflects not only a clarification of what we might call the facts, insofar as you feel compelled to do that, and obviously the older the child, the more you will need to say, but also just how to explain this theologically, biblically. Mom, Dad, why do people do these things? That's a big question, isn't it? Well, help me out. Let's talk about how to talk about this. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's have a little seminar here on how to talk to children about this kind of moral scandal, because it recurs all too frequently and leaves us in the position of having to answer questions that previous generations of children really did not have to worry about, because, to be very honest, the news media did not reach them as it does now. But it sure certainly reaches them now. And even as years ago the news cycle may have reached parents and other adults, it wasn't filtered through the popular culture, through the laugh lines on the talk shows, through, you know, all the other means by which popular culture conveys some kind of new moral norm. The phone number is 877-893-8255. I mean, what do you say to your kids? Well, this just happens. You know, people do these things. Or what do you say? It's no big deal. How do you explain whether he should or should not resign as governor of South Carolina? Do you go at it very seriously from a biblical point of view and say, let's think about what this means concerning what the Bible tells us about human sinfulness? Let's talk about temptation. Let's talk about the entire complex of how the Bible points us to an understanding in every one of these scandals of the reality of human sin and our need for redemption in Christ. We've got a lot to talk about here. And again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. I'll be honest, I have been really consumed with this meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention for several days. I was in kind of a warp dealing with that. We did this program live from the exhibition hall of the Southern Baptist Convention, and we were talking about current issues. But the news cycle on this one began after the radio program yesterday, and the next thing we know, here we are, facing some of the most excruciatingly difficult questions. Let's go to JJ, listening on the World Wide Web, calling from Pensacola, Florida. JJ, how are you handling this?
Well, I think, well, when you look at this from a biblical worldview, I mean, you just take doctrine. You have to have doctrine to answer your children's questions. And I think a great verse for that is Genesis 6:5. And the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in all the earth, and that every intentions of the thoughts of his heart were only evil continually. You know, being able to explain to our children, well, man is totally depraved and sinful, and that left to his own self, he's going to choose sin outside of God.
JJ, I think that's an excellent point, and I'll tell you, I think the particular shape of this scandal, to me, points us to the reality that sin can make us irrational. The Bible is very clear about this, that the calculus whereby the sinner plots his sin is an irrational calculus, but it makes sense at the time.
I totally agree. You know, when you look at what Paul says to the Ephesians, you know, do not be like the Gentiles who become futile in their thinking.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that becoming futile in their thinking, very quickly it tells us that we turn to idolatry right there in Romans chapter 1. And turning to idolatry, well, I think that's what this is a picture of as well. There is an idol here, and without going into any of the detail about the texts of the messages that have been released, the newspaper there in South Carolina, and now virtually everywhere, they have a certain collection of emails exchanged between the governor and this woman. There is an idolatry there. I don't know any better word for it. I think that's the best biblical word for it, of the kind of pleasure, the kind of self-centeredness that this man clearly was willing to go after and put his entire life at risk, his family, his fatherhood, his relationship with his sons, and the enormous responsibility of serving as governor of a state. JJ, I think you're right on, and thank you for your call. Folks, what are you thinking? Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We've got to explain this. And, you know, it's not just to our children, is it? It's also in conversation with our colleagues, with the neighbor. It's in conversation with fellow students on the college campus, because it is a great opportunity. This is what I want us to see before we end this discussion today. It is a great, though tragic, opportunity to say, this points us to the reality of human sin. Yes, to this man's sin. South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford's sin. But if we're honest, it also makes us think about our own sin, and it makes us understand again and again our profound need for a rescue, a savior. Becomes a gospel issue at that point. We'll be right back.
Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, America. We're talking about how we should frame a discussion, first of all and most urgently, with our children concerning the scandal now all over the headlines related to South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, but how we would also talk about this with others. I want to suggest a verse to you that comes to my mind every time someone says to me, how can you explain this? That verse is Jeremiah 17:9. In the 17th chapter of Jeremiah, the prophet writes, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it?" You know, in other words, the human heart, the center of our moral decision-making is deceitful. It lies. And somehow this man's heart lied to him and said, you can't have this. It's okay for you to want this. You can have this woman and you can have an affair with her. You can have it all. The heart is deceitful. The heart lies. The heart says, yes, you are the most important person on the planet. You do not have to take your wife and your children into adequate consideration here. You can put them on hold. You can leave them on Father's Day. I mean, this is almost like some kind of Southern Gothic novel gone sick. On Father's Day, he goes to Argentina to have an affair with a woman. The heart is desperately wicked. It's beyond cure. Who can understand it? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. How are you talking about this? I think it's an important opportunity for the stewardship of a question. And that's an important issue. There's the stewardship of a question. We are the stewards now of an opportunity to answer a question in such a way that is neither evasive nor superficial, but really gets at how we must think about this. The phone number, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Scott, calling from Orlando, Florida, listening on WTLN. What are you thinking, Scott?
Hey, Mr. Mohler, how are you?
I'm doing well. Glad to hear from you. Go right ahead.
Enjoying your show, and just had a different take on this that I would, as well as all the godly reasons why not to do this, but as well as some of the pitfalls of the Internet. People find themselves getting involved in these sort of relationships, and they don't stop to realize that they have removed all of the nonverbal communications between two people. And so even a child who's looking for a girlfriend, you know, not this type of situation, is meeting someone that he's never got to see them. He's never got to see how they act, how they move, and have that nonverbal communication. And I think they get caught up in fantasies, and it goes on and on until they want to act on this fantasy, and then reality truly comes crashing down on them as far as how ludicrous this thought really was.
Yeah, one of the amazing things here, Scott, when you talk about the Internet, for instance, and sin as opportunistic, it's pretty clear this relationship would not have happened in this way, and probably not at all, without the Internet as the means of communication whereby they established the contact, the relationship, and all the rest. You know, this man obviously did not have any kind of normal protections in his life to keep him from doing this, and this is what really puzzles me. Now let me speak as honestly as I can here, Scott. Here you have a man who is the elected governor of a state. There are only 50 of those. And you know, what it means to be governor of a state is that you are the chief executive of the state. You know, there are a lot of things that come with that. You work in a big office. You've got a lot of staff around you. The South Carolina governor, it's not the strongest constitutional role, but let me tell you, he's governor of a state. He commands the National Guard. I mean, he's got security around him. When he travels, he doesn't just travel, you know, in a convertible with the top down and drive from one place to the other. This is not a man who probably, you know, customarily is driving through the fast food drive-through window, ordering, you know, milkshakes late at night. Who is this guy? He's the governor of South Carolina. He escaped his own security. I mean, here you had a man who, by all accounts, should have been protected. It's a form of what was even more true of President Bill Clinton. And here we are. The heart is desperately wicked. Who can understand it? Scott, you're right about the dangers of the Internet. It's just one of those situations in which we need to remember that every technology brings its own opportunities for good or for evil, and we can count on Genesis 3 explaining why the evil issues and opportunities often arise first. That's why pornographers were among the first to understand the power of digital information transmission. Recent news article indicating that many of the pioneering technological breakthroughs in digital filmography and videography are coming from the pornography industry. So the porn industry explains why you may have a cheaper digital camera. Sick stuff. Genesis 3 stuff. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at Albert Mohler. Let us know what you're thinking. We'd really like to know how to frame this discussion in a way that not only does justice to the issue, but honors Christ, points to the gospel. We'll get to that very clearly when we come back on the Albert Mohler Program.
Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number to join the discussion is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Joe calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, Dr. Mohler, thank you for taking my call. As a father of four children, ages 7 through 18 ranging, I think we need to discuss, of course, with them on their level, as you were speaking momentarily ago. But I think we need to also mention, other than the fact of the sin, because sin drawing us away from God, you know, God's word says that the law is written on our hearts, so we already know it's wrong to lie and to steal and to commit adultery. But when discussing the infidelity with our children, we also need to, and whether the infidelity is caused by a person's flesh or from a spirit of lust, leading them away from God. The enemy, we know that sin in and of itself is bad, but the secondary ramifications that I'm trying to get to is fatherless homes. The enemy's trying to break up families, in essence, not only having them sin, but also having them break up the family so that fatherless homes will lead to more gang violence, gang membership, underage drinking, and drugs. We also need to discuss them and show them the and I don't mean to be too wordy, I'm sorry. Also show them the scriptures about generational curses, how the sins of the father will pass on to three and four generations, and let them see the impact of what they're doing.
Well, Joe, I appreciate your call. You know, this whole issue of the impact of sin, let's just consider this. Here's a man whose sin is likely to have an almost immediate political impact. I think it already has. There's just no doubt about it. I mean, we're talking about South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford. Well, there was a lot of chatter about him just in recent weeks, and it wasn't about his sin. It was about his stand for low taxes over against the federal bailouts. It was a stand that many assumed he was kind of positioning himself for a run at the 2012 Republican presidential nomination. Certainly he was being discussed in terms of national leadership as chairman of the Republican Governors Association. So he had a lot to lose here, and lose it he did, because now we're talking about him, and we're talking about him having resigned that national Republican Governors Association role. We're talking about him now possibly resigning as South Carolina governor. That's very much up in the air. But let me read to you from something he said in his press conference, because this was strange. USA Today noticed this. He said, there are moral absolutes, and God's law is indeed there to protect you from yourself, and there are consequences if you breach that. This press conference is a consequence, end quote. Okay, consequences. You know, I've noticed that a lot of parents talk about consequences when they really should be talking about punishment. But nonetheless, consequences, we can figure that one out. But Joe's point is that it's not just a consequence that falls upon this man. As horrible as that may be for him, as devastating as that may be to his political prospects, as obliterating as it may be to his reputation, I mean, after all, this was a man who openly condemned as a congressman President Bill Clinton and spoke of marital infidelity as an issue that should call leadership credibility into question. So he's on the record on that. And now we're talking about major marital infidelity here. But the consequences, and this is where I appreciate Joe's point there, the consequences immediately go to his wife. I mean, I've never given a thought to the South Carolina governor's wife. I've never had need to. I don't live in South Carolina. But I'm thinking about her now. Her life is largely devastated by this. And she's being written about in a way that no woman would ever want to be written about. Look at the children, four sons, the youngest of them 10. Their lives profoundly changed by this. And it just may be that the lives of successive generations even will be shaped by this day of a press conference and the revelations that came. There is an enemy who is roaming to and fro seeking whom he may devour. And Satan is identified that way. The devil's identified that way in the scripture. And yet it is false for us to blame him. Rather, he seeks the opportunity that is in our hearts. And then that's exactly what happened here. How are you explaining it to your children? There's still time to call me at 877-893-8255. But we have to get to the gospel issue here. Because as much as this news story presents us with an awkward responsibility to talk about what, frankly, we would rather not talk about tonight with our children, it also affords us the opportunity to say, you know, here again, we face in a very undeniable and undiluted way our need for a Savior, our need for gospel. Because the reality is that Mark Sanford cannot cure this problem. As horrible as sin is, it is beyond him to deal with this problem. And this sin, as ugly as it is, as tawdry as it is, as scandalous as it is no more sinful than the sin that we all know ourselves. Sin far less salacious, far less sensational, and almost certainly not to reach the headlines. You know, when the Apostle Paul goes at sin in Romans chapter 1, he not only goes at homosexuality and, you know, the sins of the flesh that you associate with sexuality, he does very explicitly go after those, but he also goes after those who are gossips, those who are disobedient to parents. While you're talking to children, my guess is you're talking to those who have been disobedient to parents. The sin problem, you know, the Apostle Paul makes it so clear. He says that the law slays us. In Romans chapter 7, the law tells us what our problem is in order that we would see our need for Christ. You know, something else has been said on this program that's profoundly right. You know, the average person on the street, almost everyone recognizes there's something profoundly wrong with this. You know, even as moral relativism on so many other issues tends to infect the entire society, moral relativism clearly doesn't work here. I haven't heard anyone say, this is no big deal. I haven't heard any secular news reporter imply this is no big deal. I haven't heard one secular commentator say no big deal. Everyone knows this is a big deal. Now, they're not consistent in thinking that through, because if they really did believe this was a big deal, they'd have to change their understanding of everything from no-fault divorce to other issues related to sexual immorality. But there is, by common grace, and by the fact that every single human being has a moral conscience by virtue of being made in the image of God, there is a lingering, undeniable knowledge that something here is horribly wrong. I haven't heard one sane person applaud the governor of South Carolina for this. No sane person can or would. When we come back, we'll offer some final thoughts about how to frame this issue for children and for teenagers. And for teenagers, there is an added element here of both opportunity and stewardship. With teenagers and older children, we really have the responsibility to say, when you look at this, it reminds you why we need structures of protection lest we also fall. That's an important point for us to consider as well, and we will when we come back on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The opportunity to talk to teenagers about this is really powerful, because teenagers are themselves at that crucial transition point in life in which they're going to either respect or disrespect the structures around them. And obviously this was a governor, a grown man with huge responsibility, who disrespected the structures around him. Specifically, this is a man who was surrounded by advisors, who was surrounded by a security detail, who was surrounded by family, who was in a covenant relationship with his wife. This is a man whom we understand to have been active in a church. This is a man who was active in an evangelical Bible study. This is a man who had Christian friends. How could this happen? Long before he would have the physical opportunity for adultery, he had decided to desecrate, to disrespect, and to escape the structures of protection around him. Now, that's a big issue. You will either see the structures of protection around you as a gift of God's grace, or you will see them as a prison you want to escape. If you see them as a prison you want to escape, then look closely at that press conference yesterday, because that is your future in one way or another. If you seek to escape the structures of protection that are around you for your good, then inevitably you'll become a victim of yourself. That's the way this works. Now, for children and teenagers, the first structure of protection is mom and dad, parents. Parents are there to define reality, to raise children in the nurtured admonition of the Lord, to set down rules and establish boundaries. Now, many children, especially teenage children, begin to see those boundaries as a prison that they want to escape. Well, fine. There will come a point where you will escape those boundaries. I guarantee it's going to happen. You're going to grow old enough that you're no longer going to be living with mom and dad, and you're going to be outside those boundaries, okay? If you see those boundaries as a prison you want to get out of, look carefully at that press conference, because something like that is your future. Because not one of us, none of us, is able to sustain any kind of sane, righteous living, any kind of holy living, or even a decent lifestyle, without any structure of protection around us. We're just not up to that. The structures of God's grace to us include structures of authority, whether you are a child, a teenager, or an adult. There are persons around us. Marriage itself is an institution that at the very first level is to offer that kind of protection. This man escaped the responsibilities of marriage as if they were a prison imprisoning him, and now he has brought his entire life, career, professional reputation, perhaps even his fatherhood, in his relationship with his sons, his marriage and his relationship with his wife, down upon his head, and all so tragically in public. There, but by the grace of God, goes any single human being. In a situation like this, define reality, tell the truth, point to the gospel, and offer a word of warning. There, but by the grace of God, goes every single one of us. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.